I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sean, I might have to start paying attention.
To what?
The election.
Oh, why?
It feels like gambling. I don't know. I hear, like, I did not watch last night, but I heard that Elizabeth Warren, like, went on the attack.
She did well.
Did she? I don't know.
No, I'm rhetorically asking.
Okay. Now I got to go back and watch the highlights.
Okay.
Which is the best way to form a political opinion is to watch little snippets. Yeah, that's... It's really, I mean, that's what the debates are, right? It's like, oh, this person that's going to be leading the country for 4 to 8 years, I'm going to judge them completely off of how many zingers they can
right.
get in.
Give me their best 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. They're just running the country. Just give me the high points.
I would imagine running the country involves like sitting through 4-hour meetings and talking policy right. and all these things. But I want the person that can best deliver a zinger.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I want to be entertained for 4 years. The collective bargaining agreement in the NFL is, we're maybe getting closer to it, Seth.
Also, this caught me by surprise a little bit. Peter King tweeted this out yesterday that all the owners were flying on their private jets. I presume all of them were private jets. I mean, there's probably a couple of poors. Oh, the poor guy from Green Bay.
Because they're not, an owner. He's just a team president.
They're publicly held. So
chosen by the city.
He's like the one normal dude that sits in with all these billionaires.
He's
at
in
these
a middle
meetings.
Seat like you were on that plane, back row.
You know what? He's probably like the kid. He's the scholarship kid in an elite New England prep school that's brought there. And then all of a sudden they discover he's Jewish.
Right.
And they're like, well, not in our owner's meeting.
So the owner.
What movie was that, School Ties?
The owner, I forget.
For anybody that knows, that's not my fantasy or anything. That's School Ties,
the movie.
Tied to a movie,
yeah. The owners are all headed to New York, and the consensus seems to be, Seth, that if they're headed to New York, that a deal is imminent between the players and the owners. And this would be big for them, getting it done before the season starts. This is the last year of the current collective bargaining agreement, so this would avoid a work stoppage like they had back in 2011, which would be big. The high point of this proposal is there would be an increase in the regular season to 17 games, which until I see what that 17th game is going to constitute, whether it's neutral site games, rivalry games, I'm going to still stand on the side of this seems to make things a little bit messy with the odd number, because the NFL has a very symmetrical structure to its standings, to its season, and this disrupts that symmetry. But let me continue here. 17 game regular season. The preseason would be reduced to 3 games. I got no problem with that. The preseason's garbage. And the big thing here, Seth, is that the playoffs would be expanded by 1 team in each conference. So you'd have 7 teams in each conference, 4 division winners, 3 wild cards. The number one team in each of the conferences would get a bye to the divisional round.
So that's a lot to digest. In terms of the 17-game thing, where the owners have sweetened the pot a little bit, it's that... I don't want to get into the numbers too much. Basically, to add a 17th game, the players will end up getting an even larger portion of the pool of money.
Yeah.
So
it winds up being $5 billion.
Oh, yeah. So it ends up, the players will, obviously, they would get more money anyway just because it's more revenue, but their share of that extra money increases as well when they go to 17. So that's how the owners have tried to sweeten the pot there. And I think the players have done a good job of putting up a fight over this. At least one guy broke ranks, because I know one anonymous source told a writer, and one anonymous player rep said that he would be okay with a 17-game season.
Okay.
Richard Sherman, a lot of these other guys are saying, no way, no how.
They've been dug in.
Yeah, and I think that against my expectations, I never thought it was going to happen. I think it's more likely to happen now than not that you're going to get 17 games. And I think it's going to be like this, Sean. We've had a whole lot of debate about this for seemingly ever, maybe 5, 6, 7 years. It's going to be like the first time I tried shrimp. I was terrified of eating shrimp until I was 13 years old. And then I ate shrimp, and you know what? It wasn't bad.
Right.
And it was no big deal. And I enjoyed shrimp to this day. And I'd still eat it on this 18th week of an NFL season.
I heard someone make the comparison to these changes to the structure, the playoffs, the schedule. I've heard them compare it to a software update to your iPhone.
Oh yeah,
where you're like, I got to download this software.
Something new.
It's probably going to wipe out my contacts. Here we go. And you hit the button. And then you realize, wow, it's giving me these funny stickers I can use in texts.
It was like when you and I bought our new iPhones.
Right.
I always dread it because usually I hate it. Usually it's something different and I don't like it.
Buttons are different.
This time it's been awesome.
Yeah.
This time I bought the new iPhone and by the way, I'm not getting paid to advertise for Apple.
No.
I surely would like to, but this has been my best experience. I think that's what the 17th game is going to be like. And I think the players will appreciate a little bit more coin in their pocket at the end of the day.
It would be interesting to know exactly how much it trickles down to the individual player. You know, like you hear $5 billion, it sounds like a lot, but is it like one of those class action lawsuits?
Yeah. You got to divide it by 1,500.
Right, like where we sued PG&E and we got $800 million, and then it trickles down to all the plaintiffs,
and
so it's
few
like
teams,
$141 per person. Yeah,
and so few teams are actually spending up to the cap anymore.
That's right.
It's going to be a little bit like I think we're headed towards baseball territory, where teams are so proud of their analytics that they stop. They're actually like bragging about how little money they're spending and that they're not going up towards the luxury tax in baseball or the salary cap in football.
Well, at least in football, there's a floor. You know what I mean?
In baseball, there's no floor.
You know, I mean, you see teams whittle their payroll down to $40 million.
Yeah.
What do you think of the expansion of the playoff field from six teams to seven teams?
Again, I think it's much ado about nothing. I know that. This is where I kind of feel like a dullard sometimes. And the same thing happened with the NCAA. I'm going to admit this to you freely. And having read everything, when it comes to making the argument that anything devalues the regular season, I am 100% completely and totally lost and don't understand. And honestly, I feel like you have to almost arbitrarily pick which side you're on and you can find a whole bunch of arguments. Yeah. Because if you're saying it diminishes the value of the regular season, well, okay, more teams are willing, if you add an extra team to the playoffs, then more teams conceivably can be fighting for that spot at the end of the season. If you also are only getting one team that has a bye, then all of a sudden more teams are conceivably fighting at the top and making the last game of the season, the 17th game of the season, more valuable. So I really honestly don't understand the argument that it diminishes the value of the regular season.
To me, the regular, of all the things that are popular in American sports, the one regular season that's been diminished the most by their postseason is college basketball. And it's because there's relative equality among all the teams. There's no great advantage that's gained by winning big in the regular season. Yeah, you get seeded one, two, or three. Maybe you don't have to travel very far for the first couple of rounds. But at the end of the day, you're having to play the same number of games. There's virtual equality amongst opponents. It's a one-and-done scenario, which really makes it equal. So that one's been diminished the most. To me, as long as there is some sort of advantage to be gained within the postseason by being great in the regular season, then it doesn't diminish the regular season, and you would still have the number one seed getting a bye to the divisional round. To me, Seth, what would make the regular season still really pop for football and guarantee is if they go with the same proposal that Major League Baseball wants to do, which is where they take seeds 2, 3, and 4 and let them pick from 5, 6, and 7 who they get to play in the wild card round.
I initially liked that a lot. As I've thought about that, I start to get nervous that it just feels too gimmicky. I know that it adds a whole lot of drama.
I think it's a justifiable reward, especially in football where matchups are
right.
So important.
This is the other thing, though, too. And this is what I don't like about the seventh game being added. I don't think it's ever a good look when a losing team makes the playoffs.
Right.
And that's happened several times in the last couple decades in the NFL. Where
usually it's division winners, right, though, that are 7-9 in a crappy division.
Yeah, which I guess
that doesn't
change regardless.
That won't
so
change.
This would still, okay, the seventh team. So the last three wild cards will never be teams with losing records. Okay,
well, not never, but probably not. You know,
I mean,
with losing records.
Yeah,
You might see an 8-8 sneak in there at some point.
You'd
in a very top-heavy conference.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, yeah. because if you're okay, yeah, that could happen. Lose a bunch of in interconference games,
right?
If you lose a bunch of boy, if the conference really sucks,
right?
But that's embarrassing.
Yeah,
it's embarrassing. Look, as somebody that suffered through that down years of the AFC back when we couldn't win a Super Bowl, I've spent my life as a fan and as a player in the AFC. If it happens again, I don't want to be the conference that has like two losing team playoff records.
That doesn't bother me too much. I guess were the Steelers 9-7 this year, or were they 8-8?
Yeah,
they would have been the seventh team in the playoffs this year. The Steelers with Duck Hodges as their quarterback, whether they're 8-8 or 9-7, to me, they're just fodder for whoever they're playing in the first round.
These would have been the two extra games in this year's format. And Florio wrote this like he was dunking on people. I think it's debatable. The extra teams in the playoffs would have yielded these first round games. The Steelers at the Chiefs and the Rams at the Packers.
Okay. I guess those are big names, at least.
Yeah, this is what he said. He said, if the new playoff structure had been in place this year, the extra playoff games would have been Steelers at Chiefs and Rams at Packers. Consider that before complaining about it.
The Steelers would have gotten destroyed by the Chiefs.
No, the Rams didn't intrigue anybody this year.
Right,
and the Packers, okay, great. I guess maybe, were they finally going to get it together? No, it turned out they didn't.
Yeah.
Would I wanted the Rams to beat the Packers, though? No, nah. That doesn't do anything for me. Neither of those matchups did anything for me.
No, we'll talk more about that as the show rolls on. Adam Spillane is in West Palm Beach. We will check in with him. What's going on at Astros spring training today? He is presented by Texas Bay Credit Union, and he joins us next. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. We go to West Palm Beach, and we join our Astros reporter. You can catch all his work on sportsradio610.com. He's brought to you by Texas Bay Credit Union. Adam Spillane joining us on the show. Adam, how are things in West Palm Beach this morning?
Things are good right now, and yesterday was an interesting day because you get out there and you see Yordan Alvarez hit a home run off of Josh James. He goes oppo off of him during a live BP, and we asked Dusty Baker about Yordan Alvarez and does he expect to see him play more in the outfield, and Dusty Baker is talking about how Yordan Alvarez had some knee issues last year. That's why he didn't play the outfield more. And then Alvarez admitted to us that, his knees were a bit of a problem, but they're good right now. So yesterday was an interesting day for sure.
Have you had a chance to watch him in the outfield much at all, or at first base perhaps?
He played 10, 11 games in the outfield last year. He wasn't good there.
In camp this year.
No, okay. They haven't done any sort of defense. I haven't seen any outfield drills, and I have not seen him at first base. I don't know if they think that he can play first base. I don't know if he has the skill set for it. I don't know if he has the hands to play first base. I know people just say, I'll just stick him at first base. And that's a good way. If you ever want to make a first baseman mad, just tell them that anyone can play first base. They really like it when people say that.
It is, but it's weird to me when somebody who's such a great hitter, who obviously would have good hand-eye coordination. And I know there's a level of athleticism that goes along with it. I just it's always strange to me when somebody like that can't figure it out at first base. But I get it. You're right. It's not as simple as just like, hey, go play this position in professional athletics. It's no big deal.
Yeah, and also it's just, he'd be a big target out there, but balls in the dirt. Is he going to be able to scoop those?
Is he doing the splits?
Does he have the flexibility to be able to be out there? Does he have that quick enough first step to get off the line? So it's little things like that that I'm not sure they think that he can handle. I think that they could see Kyle Tucker play first base more than he would.
Adam Spillane joining us from West Palm Beach. Adam, one of the things Seth and I were kicking around earlier today, we were talking about Carlos Correa taking up for Jose Altuve and how it possibly reflected on guys that Carlos didn't mention, that basically anybody other than Altuve, Reddick, and Tony Kemp, by not being mentioned, meant that they were definitely part of the scheme before. I know Bregman kind of quasi-admitted to being part of it in his scripted apology. George Springer, I guess, is the one guy who I think about where I go, I wonder if Springer was cool with Carlos Correa doing that. Do we know if, and if not, would you be interested in possibly asking Carlos? I don't know if this topic has died down. I don't want to put you in harm's way, but I'm curious if Carlos cleared this with other guys before he went and kind of, verbally exonerated Jose Altuve.
I don't think he did. I think that it was kind of off the cuff. I think that it was something that he wanted to get off of his chest more than anything else. And I do know because Dusty Baker was asked if he was upset that Carlos Correa went out and kind of kept the story going for, you know, an extra day or two. And, you know, I don't think Dusty was thrilled about it, but at the same time, I think that he respected that he had his teammates back. That's a good question. I don't think that he would have cleared it though with anyone. I think that he just kind of did it on his own. And you know, it's laudable to do that, but at the same time, I don't know if they were thrilled about it.
I know, you know, we've had a couple of notable quotes now from a couple of guys that you might have expected quotes from. As things maybe start to weigh on guys, as maybe a lot of the attention starts to get to guys, Reddick came out and just said that, you know, to paraphrase, they're going to have to play well to try to shut everybody up. And then Lance McCullers noted that the people who are popping off the most tend to be players that aren't going to play them this year. Do you sense any kind of an agitation among some guys that maybe they're getting sick of all of it?
Oh, no question. Just yesterday, for whatever reason, and this is an MLB thing, every clubhouse in Major League Baseball, I think, they always have MLB Network on. And so yesterday, they're in the clubhouse, and they have MLB Network on, and they're talking about Aaron Judge and what the Yankees are saying about the Astros. And one Astros player was just annoyed, takes the remote, and he just turns off the TV and walks out.
Oh, he Trubisky'd it.
So I do think that, yeah, they're tired of hearing people call them cheaters. They're tired of people saying that their World Series is tainted. So, yeah, they certainly are agitated, and it will be interesting to see how they carry that onto the field. And if at any point, you know, somebody just snaps at some point, because this will be a continued topic once you get into the regular season, once they start traveling to other ballparks. I mean, their first road series will be in Oakland. It's going to come up. There's no getting around it. And so this is going to continue to come up over and over again. And if somebody snaps on someone, it wouldn't shock me. It would almost feel natural if that happened.
Adam Spillane joining us from Astros spring training in West Palm Beach, brought to you by Texas Bay Credit Union. Adam, have you noticed, just from your observation, the fans? Can you tell from Astro fans that are there that this is any sort of thing that's weighing on them, or does it appear to be sort of spring training, business as usual kind of stuff with fans getting ready for the season with, you know, joy and hope and things like that?
Yeah, I don't think the fans that are here care. I would be interested, and I haven't been here before, but I wonder if the crowds are any smaller than they have been in the past for this portion of spring training. But there have been plenty here. There's a heckler or two. I've only heard one. I know there was a trash can thing a couple of days ago. I didn't see that. I've personally only seen the one heckler, and he wasn't even in the complex. He was kind of outside on the bridge. So to me, the fans are the fans, and you have plenty of people wearing Astros jerseys and plenty of people trying to make awkward conversations with the players. I don't think that's changed. So I don't think it's weighing. I mean, if you're here, you're an Astros fan.
Sure.
Let's be honest. If you come all the way to West Palm Beach, you're an Astros fan and you don't care what they did.
Do you see, I know the facility down there is kind of set up to genuinely separate the two teams, the Nationals and the Astros, the two teams that share the facility. Do you see any of the Nationals fans at all at any point during the day?
You'll see the fans because the parking lot, just in the parking lot, because there's essentially one area to park. And so that's where the fans would congregate with one another. But that's it. They go their separate way off to the right, which is where the Nationals complex is. And I haven't seen any Nationals players throughout this week. But you'll see people – you'll see their executives driving up. That's really the only mix that you have with the two teams right now is just the parking lot area.
What's the nicest vehicle you've seen at spring training?
I saw a Bentley, but I don't think that was a player. I think that was just someone, a West Palm Beach resident. Because remember, there aren't a lot of guys that live here.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of rental cars.
Yeah.
It's probably passing.
That's it. Passing. Pulling up in a Bentley. Passing those checks with his new
ESA. He's got all that ESPN cheddar.
The license plate says Clicks with an X.
Exactly. Adam Spillane, presented by Texas Bay Credit Union. He's in West Palm Beach with the Houston Astros. Adam, we appreciate the time, and we look forward to hearing from you throughout the day.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you.
All right, there it is. Adam Spillane joining us on the show. So some old video popped up from Joe Girardi on MLB Network.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it yesterday. I don't know how recently it popped back up. But obviously the Astros are the ones getting pinata'd in this whole thing right now. But the Yankees' hands are not clean. You know, the Carlos Beltran was a Yankee for the three seasons on one end and the two seasons on the other end, either as an advisor or a player, surrounding his one season with the Astros in 2017. And the Yankees themselves have been fined for forms of cheating before. Joe Girardi was the manager up through 2017. He was fired after the Astros beat the Yankees in the ALCS in 2017. This is some footage on the MLB Network from when Girardi was an analyst on there. We've actually had him on the show a few times back before he became the manager of the Phillies. And this is Girardi, and you have to picture him on the set on kind of their miniature baseball diamond. And the segment is about sign stealing using technology, using people up in the booth to relay signs. And Girardi admits some things here and nearly, I think, gives himself up. Seth, let's Zapruder this and see if Joe Girardi is maybe subconsciously almost admitting to the Yankees doing something similar to the Astros.
You know, some teams might turn their back. Who knows?
So what did you guys use?
Right. Yeah. So you got to worry about it. And sometimes you got to worry about just how it's being relayed. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I was part of a system where it came from upstairs to someone in the dugout to the guy in second base. And we eventually caught it.
So there are a couple things there.
First, to the hit?
First he slaps, yeah, to the hit, and he's pointing at the hitter. To the guy on second base.
Right.
So, which is still, even if it were to the guy on second base, he said it's coming from upstairs to the dugout.
In real time.
Well, how's it get there?
Right?
And so there's that. And then at the very end, he says, then they caught it, or we caught it. Like, so he makes so many different little errors here where he's speaking in the first person, collective or whatever it is, when he's talking about we, but then he acts like at the very end, well, then we caught it, so it makes it sound like it was another team. It's all very unclear as to whether he's talking about his own team or somebody else that they caught, in which team he's talking about necessarily.
Yeah, well, I hate assuming, because I feel like people are making a lot of assumptions about the Astros in this, and I don't want to be hypocritical. I think people are making assumptions that it's the Yankees he's talking about.
I mean, he played for four different teams, I think, and he's managed a couple, you know.
Yeah. He did. I don't know that – I don't know what the technology, you know, when he was a player, if the technology was advanced enough to do what it is he's describing.
I mean, all you need for that is a telephone. If it's somebody up in the stands doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Or if they're making a hand signal of some sort, or, you know, that's not technology. But it's still, you're still not supposed to be communicating from the dugout to even second base.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be the guy on second base is real crafty. And again, this gets into the nuances and the gray area of what you have. But
I choose to believe Aaron Judge was cheating.
I choose to believe that it is interesting. And again, I'm not excusing anything the Astros did. But Aaron Judge is yet another one of these guys that's popped off that has a little bit of an axe to grind in terms of his own poor performances. And if we're talking about the MVP race, look, he had an abysmal August in 2017, and that didn't have anything. July was bad, and then August was just atrocious.
Right.
So right as people are really figuring out who they're going to vote for MVP, that was all going on. And it's just interesting that he's the one that's going to pop off like that and act like he didn't lose that himself, you know?
Yep.
Now, just somebody brought this up yesterday, and I brought it up in the past. As far as the MVP race goes, even if Altuve didn't contribute, you do have to acknowledge that, all right, but by way of having a strong lineup around him, he benefits. By way of having base runners on the base pass, he benefits. So there, almost even whether he wanted to or not, unfortunately, he did benefit from that if the sign stealing was effective.
Yep.
Creation again.
Well, he and Whitworth are both like
58 years old.
Yeah.
You know, if you're gonna pay Laremy Tunsil top dollar and you spent two draft picks for him, but maybe Costanzo or Jack Conklin you could have gotten and paid close to top dollar for, I would have preferred to do that this year, you know, given that the Tunsil trade didn't yield an appearance in the AFC Championship or anything.
Right.
I'm not going to be overly crazy about it, especially if any of these guys hit free agency.
Last one on Barnwell's list, pick up Deshaun Watson's fifth year option and sign him to an extension. I don't know why picking up his fifth year option matters if you're signing him to an extension, but basically get Deshaun Watson locked up and signed. as your quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
All right, let's do some headlines, Jonesy. Speaking of putting the roster together, the Texans did make a move yesterday. They signed nose tackle Brandon Dunn to a they couch it as a contract extension. He was ready to become a free agent once the new business year started with the NFL. So I guess it's an extension because technically he's still under contract. He was going to be a free agent. They made sure he didn't hit the market. He signs a deal, Seth, 3-year deal worth $12 million, which I would imagine sounds like a lot to people for a guy who's just sort of a plugger on the defensive line. But that's the going rate for what Brandon Dunn.
Yeah, that's and I think that you have to hedge a little bit because you don't know if DJ Reader is going to be back, and you also don't know if JJ is going to stay healthy. JJ's been on IR 3 of the last 4 seasons, and this year when JJ went out, you had Brandon Dunn starting at the nose tackle, DJ Reader at defensive end, and that might very well happen again. Especially if maybe they start to load manage JJ a little bit this year, if they can convince him to.
Mm-hmm.
JJ's got too much of the James Harden in him, I think.
Likes to play every snap.
I bet he really like objects
sure
to the
does.
Load management.
Yeah, for sure.
So I say jokingly when he's got like that's a good old school thing to
right,
have.
Right.
So I'm for it. I don't think it's not a whole bunch of money to play for a guy that's capable of starting.
Brandon Dunn got congratulations from JJ Watt on Twitter. Yes, sir, DJ Dunny, well-deserved, great player, even better teammate. That's true. Low-key thing we have not brought up here, they do get to keep their locker room DJ, so the music will remain on point in the Texans' locker room. The last part of J.J. Watt's tweet, he implores the Texans to get DJ Reader his contract extension done.
He said, hopefully DJ Reader next.
He said, DJ Reader next, please, thanks. So he's thanking William O'Brien
in
advance.
I think he said, or else.
Or,
yeah. Did you say, are you sure you didn't say, or else?
Well, if they don't... JJ didn't do this very much where he goes out and says, hey, make sure you keep this guy, make sure you keep that guy.
We do like sometimes when we get these mic'd up segments or from Hard Knocks, we see JJ talking smack to Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. He's not going to. Yeah. Sometimes you wonder, like, how playful is that?
JJ Watt. The second half
Could JJ Watt get Bill O'Brien fired?
That's an interesting one. JJ Watt of 2014 might have been able to get him fired.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt of 2019, I don't know. I don't know if you have leverage when you miss three of the last 4 seasons when you wind up on injured reserve.
But I would say hypothetically if J.J. Watt like made himself look very disgruntled or displeased with the way Bill O'Brien ran things.
Look, we know who would win the popularity contest in Houston.
Well, but the with great unpopularity sometimes comes consequences.
Yeah,
who knows?
Right. That's right. The Rockets get the second half of the season started back up tonight. It feels like it's been a month since the Rockets played a basketball game. They last played on February 11th against the Boston Celtics. It's been a 9-day All-Star break for most of these guys. They play the Warriors. When this game was put on the schedule before the season, it was a much sexier game. Now you're playing a Warriors team that has Draymond Green as its best player. And yesterday, Draymond Green was asked what he still wants to accomplish in this season in the lottery.
A buyout.
A buyout?
Go to a playoff team.
Draymond Green wants a buyout so he can be on a playoff team.
So he was clearly joking
But
that's going to get printed.
He was cackling. Jonesy's part of the problem by putting that audio.
Has it been printed?
Trying to start rumors.
Multiple places as fact, and that's what he wants.
I don't know. Chris Jones did our headlines. Jonesy, where did you find that audio from Draymond?
It was one of the Warriors beat writers.
Okay, yeah.
Did he say Draymond Green joked that he wanted to buy out?
Yes.
Oh, okay, all right.
That's good.
This would be a nice little experiment where he goes clearly joking.
Yeah.
And how many people or like how many outlets, like how many major outlets are going to report that as actual news?
I don't know if major outlets will because that's something you would double check on, I would hope. But I guarantee you, there are people on social media who read it and took it seriously.
You would think you'd double check on it. Did you see some of the headlines immediately following the Kobe Bryant play? Like something much more dire?
Yeah. I'm aware. Rockets Warriors tonight. Rockets have the Jazz this weekend in Utah.
Small ball.
This
is just like the Daryl Morey musical, remember? It was about those tiny people.
That's right.
What were they? Were they tiny people that played basketball or something?
I didn't see Daryl Morey's musical.
I was supposed to go and then I had to cancel at the last moment. And I wonder, I hope he doesn't hold it against me. Mm-hmm. Is it that really cool? Is it the Match Theater in Midtown?
Okay.
Really cool setup there.
It wasn't like a wedding you had to get on a plane for.
I think it's kind of general admission in those places, though. Oh. So I don't think he would have seen like wait a second.
Okay.
Who's not sitting in,
so the only way he
in,
knows
in row 7, seat 5?
That you didn't go is if he's listening right now.
Yes, right this moment, which okay. I can almost guarantee you he's not.
I don't think so either. Adrian Peterson, he might be listening. He makes his home in the Houston area. If so, what up, AD? Adrian Peterson had his contract extended with the Washington Redskins yesterday. The 35-year-old running back had his club option exercised for the 2020 season. Second year of a 2-year deal he signed last summer. Ron Rivera, the new coach of the Redskins, said in a press release, Adrian Peterson is the epitome of what it means to be a pro in this league. Adrian's leadership and passion towards the game of football will set an example of what is expected of the players in this program moving forward. Adrian Peterson continues to grind along, and not trying to make light or throw shade or do whatever. Adrian Peterson needs to keep working because his financial issues are well chronicled.
Yeah.
He's still a very effective player. I don't think he's hanging on for a paycheck necessarily.
Yeah.
But it's good for Adrian Peterson that
he had to take out a loan.
He had some bad investments.
Was it during the lockout or was it? Yeah. Sometimes guys blow their money by spending frivolously, but sometimes guys just get into a bad investment.
Right.
And so it goes. He did. There was that image of him at a birthday party where he was riding a camel or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, he overspent on some of his parties.
The exotic animals at a party are always a telltale sign.
Did someone maybe now, doesn't have a total grasp?
Maybe.
On,
well, Chris Bosh is doing fine. He had camels at his party
once. Yeah, he had multiple $100 million guaranteed contracts.
You know,
Adrian Peterson's made a lot of money, but he spent a lot of money.
He might have also, though, sometimes guys will put it in a trust. So, like, maybe he didn't have access to the trust until he was done playing. So he took out a loan kind of against his trust or something. Yeah.
I would say against all odds, he's made it to 35. This is a guy who came back from an ACL. In New Orleans, it looked like when he was on the Saints. Remember he was on the Saints briefly and he was yelling at Sean Payton on the sidelines and glaring at him about not getting in the game?
Oh, he's proven me way wrong.
Me too.
I thought he was done.
Yeah,
and I didn't think he had some of the performances in him that he's had.
Yep. There is a growing sense, this according to Vincent Bonsignore, who covers the Raiders in the Bay Area, growing sense within the league that there are NFL teams prepared to inquire with the Raiders about the possibility of trading for Derek Carr. Seth, what kind of team should look into trading for Derek Carr, if any?
This is the interesting thing, Sean. There is a glut of quarterback talent now. There are quarterbacks, starting caliber quarterbacks, all over the place, and not that many teams that are actually looking at a quarterback.
We went through it yesterday. There's about 10 or 12 teams that are in the quarterback market, and there's like 16 or 17 good quarterbacks out there.
And there are also quarterbacks available in the draft. You've got at least two, so at least two of those teams. I don't know about Justin Herbert. Like, I don't know if Justin Herbert's going to be a good NFL quarterback. I mean, obviously, I don't know if any of these top three quarterbacks are going to be good
NFL quarterbacks. They're all going to get drafted in the first round.
They're all going to get drafted in the first round, but even with Justin Herbert especially, I feel like the other two guys, Joe Burrow and Tua, are very smart players. Justin Herbert, some of the questions are about how quickly he reads coverages and goes through his progressions and all that, his decision making. That guy might really need some time to sit and learn the game.
Yep.
But at least two teams that draft are probably going to want guys to play right away. Tua, I know there's the hip issue and how quickly he recovers from it and everything. But yeah, it's going to be.
Where does Derek Carr fall into that radar for you? You know, we don't have to go through all the names, but we know who the upper names are. The upper names are Brady and Rivers. Maybe Matthew Stafford via trade is available. Cam Newton, in terms of just a sexy name, is Carr that next tier below? Is he even below that?
He's above Cam Newton just because of health and youth.
How would you feel if the Colts made a trade? The Colts have extra draft picks.
I'd be cool with it. I'd love that.
If you're a Texan fan,
I think it's easy to
game
plan versus Derek Carr.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's above Cam Newton. He's probably at the bottom of the heap. Bridgewater would be the interesting one. I think Bridgewater, there's an unknown upside, perhaps.
Yep.
I think, okay, look, if Bridgewater's upside is that he just throws the ball close to the line of scrimmage, then what you have there is a Derek Carr.
Yeah.
If his upside is more than that, and it very well might be, because I think they managed him pretty carefully, I think I'd rather just roll the dice with Bridgewater.
So boxing is going to take center stage this weekend. Big heavyweight fight, and this doesn't happen often with boxing anymore, but this will be a fight I'm looking forward to watching. Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder have a heavyweight bout for the championship in Vegas coming up this weekend. Tyson Fury, if you're not familiar with him, big personality, he's made an interesting change to his diet while training for this fight.
You've cut out Diet Cokes. I also understand that you're coming in around 270. So it sounds like you mean business in terms of sitting down on your punches and fighting more than moving. Why cut out Diet Cokes?
It's just something, a little sacrifice more. You know, I love my Diet Cokes, and I was having, I don't know, 20, 30 in a day sometimes.
Well, that's a little ridiculous.
It is a little ridiculous.
All right, so you see it? He drank 20 to 30 Diet Cokes a day. Now, granted, that's only 20 to 30 calories through those Diet Cokes, but that's motor oil you're putting into your body.
There's a whole lot of artificial in that when you start talking about that much. Plus, some people believe that in some people's bodies respond to artificial sweeteners in a small way, like actual sugar, like it spikes their insulin. So it can have, for some people, it can have harmful effects, or at least arguably. They also, Diet Coke has 42 milligrams of caffeine times 30.
Seth is reciting this off the top of his head.
So I'm just real. So basically, you're looking at, that's like having 12 cups of coffee in a day.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's over 1,200 milligrams of coffee. Yeah. So that's a lot of caffeine he's cutting out there, too.
I'm old enough to remember the time where Diet Coke didn't exist. It was called Tab. Remember Tab?
Coke didn't have a version of a Diet Coke?
Diet Coke was invented like back in the late 70s.
Oh,
yeah.
So Tab was like the first Tab diet was, soda with
Tab
saccharin?
Tab was the first Diet Cola that I can remember. Jonesy, you two, you're nodding your head in there.
In the pink can.
The pink can, yeah. You can still find it in some places. Yeah.
Unveiled on July 8th, 1982.
Diet Coke?
Yeah.
Yeah, see?
So I remember Tab. I didn't know that it was a relatively recent invention, Diet Cola.
Yeah. I was in junior high. I probably just got done watching Fast Times at Ridgemont High on my VHS for the on my VCR for the 10th time, rewinding Phoebe Cates. And like, okay, I got to get me a Diet Coke.
You know, the good old days back when Coke was first invented, before we had all these rules and regs, Coke was touted as like a medicinal elixir.
Right.
You could get away with that.
Yep.
You basically had a bunch of people running around like Tom Brady's personal trainer there, who had that supplement he claimed cured cancer.
Alex Guerrero,
and then
yeah.
he had a supplement that he claimed cured concussions.
Right.
You Quack. Could just get away with that all you want.
Yep.
Coca-Cola was a health drink.
That's right.
Oh, have you seen some of these ads from the 50s where they talk about how essential it is to start your kid's day with sugar to give them the energy they need?
Oh, old commercials are the best. Last headline here, non-sports. This, according to the New York Post, communications employees at social networking giant Facebook routinely blow-dry CEO Mark Zuckerberg's armpits before big speeches, as claimed in a new book.
That is rich.
Zuckerberg.
Like, literally rich. Not rich like, oh, that's rich.
Zuckerberg, who became famous for his perspiration during a televised interview a decade ago, quote, is consumed by his public image, according to a Bloomberg review of Stephen Levy's new book, Facebook, the inside story. The 35-year-old wants to look cool and dry instead of sweaty and nervous, so he has communications employees blow-dry his armpits. Seth, the question is, you've talked about hiring an assistant. You've talked about how much you sweat. Would your assistant have to blow dry your armpits before either a big speaking engagement or a flight?
You know what? My armpits are fine because I had the procedure done like 10 years ago.
They have to blow dry the rest of your body.
To blow dry my entire body. Yeah. I would walk around with some kind of MRI looking machine that had just blow dryers all around it.
Like a car wash.
Yeah. And that would,
like the end of a drive-through car wash.
So their responsibility would be like sliding me in and pulling me out before I go out there. Right. Yeah.
How about Zuckerberg?
Zuckerberg, the worst he looked was in those congressional sessions where he had to sit on the phone book.
Was he sweating there too?
I didn't realize he was a shorter guy, or at least maybe he felt like he was. Yeah. He was, because I've seen short people testify at Congress. It's no big deal. I mean, the table is kind of sit up. I guess it makes you look like a little kid.
Suck.
Maybe
that means you got to get on your knees and blow dry his armpits. You know, just like to get underneath there and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then that looks bad in the transcript
too. Really,
it was like, and then Mr. Zuckerberg told me to get on my knees.
Right.
And then bam!
Right.
All of a sudden, you're out another billion.
Right. That's right. That's right. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com has done his thing. He does every. This might be my favorite thing he does, Seth. In the off season. He goes through the five moves he would do for each team. I'm amazed how in-depth his knowledge is on all these teams, quite honestly.
Well, Barnwell?
Yeah,
I think he's not sitting there spewing it from memory. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but maybe so. I'm trying to give the guy a little bit of props.
I don't. This is the problem with Barnwell. Barnwell is like, he's got a whole lot of book stats, and he'll say things sometimes that just don't make any sense. Yeah. There are a lot of other nerds that are a lot smarter than Barnwell.
Okay.
It's kind of like with Bill Simmons.
Well, he's got me snowed over.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. What were we going to say about Bill Simmons? I'm here for some Bill Simmons shade.
I feel like Simmons kind of was like a new type of sports media dude.
Yeah.
That brought a kind of a fresh voice, like the voice of the fan. But at the time, after he brought that style in, a bunch of people who are smarter and better than him came in and supplanted him. And I feel bad now for some of the people working at The Ringer, because I listen to them when they go on to podcasts with them, and I'm like, oh, wow, it's got to be awful to be so much smarter than your boss. Because some of those guys at The Ringer are brilliant, you know?
Yeah,
I used to feel like that with Zach Lowe when Zach Lowe used to be on Simmons' podcast, and you'd feel like Zach Lowe was trying so hard to be polite and not just call his boss a moron.
So Simmons hired Barnwell at Grantland, I think, back in the day. Like, he gave the entree for Barnwell.
Well, and so Barnwell's kind of the same way. He started in with all the stat-heavy stuff and kind of made it accessible. But now there are all these other stat nerds that are just way better
at it. So this I do enjoy that he does every year, the five moves for each team. Very consumable. Here are the five moves he has that the Texans should make this offseason. First, he has their projected cap space is $65.9 million. That's a lot of money. It's going to go quickly once they start signing some of these guys. But
if they get around to signing Tunsil and Watson.
If they
do. See. If Mahomes decides to wait a year, then the Texans might conceivably have a little bit of a... I don't know whether they want to kick the can down the road on it or not. I don't know if they want to get it hemmed up or not.
Let's talk about it, because it comes up later in this piece. Number one, replace DJ Reader. He's basically saying that DJ Reader's turned himself into a valuable player, former fifth-round pick who... He's a 347-pound tackle, which I think he's reading off of an obsolete roster. I don't think he's that heavy. But he's got a little bit of a pass rush juice to him. O'Brien and company don't seem inclined to bring back Reader, who will likely draw a deal in excess of $11 million per season. Let me stop right there. John McClain is adamant that they will bring back DJ Reader.
Yeah, he says they're going to franchise tag him if they can't come to a deal.
Do you want to franchise tag DJ Reader? Do you want to spend $14 or $15 million even on a one-year deal for a defensive tackle, albeit a really good one?
I wouldn't mind, honestly, depending on how aggressive they want to be in other areas. I'd really prefer that they have the cap space to go after one of the marquee cornerbacks. But
what if it cost you that?
I don't know if it would cost him that. I think that they're...
But what if it did? What if you had to make a choice?
No, I don't want to. Yeah. But I don't think it's going to come to that. I think they could do both. I think they can franchise tag DJ Reader and still go after a marquee free agent.
Barnwell says, with needs elsewhere on the roster, plenty of contracts to be signed, the Texans could pursue a cheaper option. Patriots defensive tackle Danny Shelton could be a target in free agency. Or they could use one of their fourth-round picks on a big body. What do you think of Danny Shelton?
I don't know. If you're going to lose DJ Reader, I think if they lose DJ Reader, they don't have to go out and replace him necessarily. They have, and I think if you'd want to go, they have enough big bodies as it is. I think ideally you'd go after a guy that's a little bit more of a two-way threat. And again, this is where Barnwell doesn't get it. DJ Reader is a much better pass rushing threat than Danny Shelton is. Mm-hmm. He gets more push. He's not going to ever get a ton of sacks because he's not that kind of a dynamic athlete, but he's a more versatile and dynamic player than Danny Shelton. So I say, no, I don't want
to. You say bully on that.
I say, yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Number two, rebuild at cornerback. Yeah, you're right. He's stating some obvious things here. take back what I said.
I'll stick up for him anytime, because Bill Barnwell once said, anytime you do 32 of anything, it's a lot. So whenever you start writing about local fan bases, nobody knows. National writers get a lot of guff for not knowing your local fan base.
Yeah.
Like, it gets, but then you realize, oh yeah, they're covering 32 teams.
Right.
We know this team pretty intimately.
Right, right.
So I'll cut them a break.
Okay. So it's, boy, role reversal.
I feel guilty. Have a weight issue. I feel good for him.
Has he put any of it back on?
I don't think so. He's done a really good job.
Okay,
he lost a ton of weight and he's kept it off, and
he
good
did.
For him.
Yep. Yeah. They still have Gary and Con. This is the Texans cornerback depth chart right now. Gary and Conley, who they still have a couple years' worth of him left. Keon Crossan and Lonnie Johnson. Those are the only ones that either haven't been cut, Vernon Hargraves, or aren't pending free agents. Bradley Roby, Jonathan Joseph.
I would think that this is where Bradley Roby came here on a one-year prove-it deal.
Yep.
He was hoping to get some kind of the same benefit as the Honey Badger. And I don't think that teams obvious. I would imagine he understands that he doesn't necessarily have the same cachet as Tyrann Mathieu, but that he was hoping to get a better offer than what he had, which I think the best deal was the Steelers, like a three years, $30 million.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to get a much better offer than that this year. So this time around, maybe he accepts that kind of offer from the Texans.
And if you give me over under on Bradley Roby, $10 million a year, I will take the over on that.
Yeah.
Because I think, well, for one, just the mere fact that the cap's going to go up, so contracts are going to go up. So just cost of living inflation makes me, because I don't think he did anything to hurt himself last year on the free agent market. He was banged up. He had the hamstring injury. But I think at that position, Seth, at cornerback, where it's really hard to find elite traits and elite talent, he has both of those things. And when he was on the field, he was very, very good last year. When he played, Bradley Roby was. But he was very solid for the Texans.
I guess that's the question, is exactly what are people anticipating? Because, okay, so this year it was his injuries. The year before, with his previous team, it was just consistency of play.
And a bit of a turd, right? Didn't he skip practice?
Yeah, he actually got fined because he just went MIA one day after a bad game, didn't show up on a Monday.
Yep.
So there's going to be question marks about it. Now, the PFF, or overthecap.com, projected a five-year, $11 million average per year.
Yeah.
So does he get 5 years? Does he get 3 years, $10 or $11 million per year? I would say he's like a top 10 free agent cornerback right now. Maybe top five.
I think he's going to get, honestly, I think he's going to get like 13, 14, somewhere in that range.
Byron Jones is going to get more money than him. Yep. Chris Jones Jr. is an interesting one, I think, because he's going to be 31 years old, and he's more, or excuse me, Chris Harris Jr.
Chris Harris. He's older, yeah.
He's going to be 31.
Right.
So I bet he gets like a 2 or 3 year deal. And I don't think I've wanted the Texans to go after him, but now I start to get nervous about the age.
The names that Barnwell brings up at cornerback, he says the logic that O'Brien and the Pats heavy staff will look toward former Belichick corners. That'll be interesting because Weaver's not a Belichick guy. And I wonder how much say Anthony Weaver's going to have. But continuing, the Texans could pursue veterans such as Aqib Talib or Logan Ryan. I feel like Aqib Talib might be washed.
Do you feel is Aqib Talib a Bill O'Brien type of guy?
I wonder what the definition of a Bill O'Brien type of guy is. I feel like
it's true. It's maybe
I feel
changed
like it's
a little
expanded
bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, like Vernon Hargraves. But now Vernon Hargraves didn't give any money to. Bill O'Brien has given big contracts to blue collar guys.
Yeah.
Has he given a big contract yet to his William O'Brien? Given a big contract to kind of a potential locker room distraction or whatnot?
Not that I can think of.
Okay.
Not that I can think of.
And an aged one at that, you know?
This is where I think the Texans are going to go at cornerback, Seth. I think there's going to be some cornerbacks on the market that get cut by their teams, whether it's Xavier Rhodes or A.J. Boye. Josh Norman's already been cut. Guys, I'm not saying those guys specifically, but maybe Boye, who knows? But guys like that, that have been cut by their teams. And the reason why I think he's going to go after guys like that is, one, they're going to be cheaper. Two, they won't count towards your compensatory pick formula.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, when you lose big free agents like the Texans could lose Bradley Roby or DJ Reader, that's when you get the compensatory picks. However, for every one that you lose, it gets canceled out by a free agent, a true free agent that you sign. If a guy gets cut in the middle of his contract, that's not the type of free agent that counts against that. The Texans are going to need compensatory picks in 2021. Because they don't have a first or second round pick.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to attack free agency with that in mind.
I liked his third point for what his five-part plan
to
improve the team. Stop trading away draft picks. So that goes along with that. Now, this is where it's interesting. Brian Gaine, I feel bad for Brian Gaine because I think Brian Gaine had a five-year plan and he was following it. And I think the first couple years of that plan included saving your draft picks, collecting compensatory picks, and then eventually maybe cashing in on them or using them to trade up, and then re-signing guys like DJ Reader and whatnot. I feel like maybe Bill O'Brien just wanted to be 1 year further ahead on that plan, so that's why you get rid of Brian Gaine. They're like, okay, we've got these draft picks, let's use some of them, and here we go. We're going to get a Tunsil. We're going to get a Gary and Conley, and we're off to the races.
I don't think O'Brien liked the fact that they had so much cap space this past year either.
Yeah. I think that was part of his plan, though, too, was he wanted to be able to re-sign right. DJ Reader as well as Deshaun Watson. And maybe you go out and get an offensive tackle. And in his mind, he was thinking, maybe we'll go out and get an offensive tackle in free agency. Sure, we'll have to pay him Laramie Tunsil type of money, but we won't have to give up two first-round picks for him.
Yeah.
So his sense of urgency for solving the offensive tackles wasn't where Bill O'Brien wanted it to be.
I don't know that I've done this heat check with you postseason, but I feel like we were checking in periodically throughout the season on just how we felt about the Tunsil trade. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the Tunsil trade right now?
I feel...
because the draft is imminent now. Now you start to feel the burn and the pain a little bit of not having a first-round pick.
Yeah.
These mock drafts come out, and you go, well, no need to click on this. Texans don't have a first-round pick.
I know.
Right?
It's awful.
But so now that we're starting to feel some of that pain, where are you with the Tunsil trade?
I'm cautiously optimistic about it. I got to see what... if the Texans are in any kind of cap trouble next year,
yeah,
or uncomfortable from a cap perspective, then I'm going to start judging that trade a lot more harshly as well. This year, for whatever it's worth, the offensive tackle draft class is supposed to be very, very good. Now, would they have been able to capitalize on it? Some of those guys are going to be busts. Mm-hmm. You know, Laramie Tunsil is a very, very good offensive tackle.
Yeah.
He jumps offsides or false starts too much, but he's a very good offensive tackle. There's no guarantee that any of these guys that you took this year would have panned out for you. So I'm okay with it for right now.
Yeah.
I'm not overly enthused about it. It's not like all of a sudden they fixed the pass rush issue.
Well, do you think you'll feel better or worse about it after Laramie Tunsil signs an extension, which is number 4 on Barnwell's list, by the way? Sign Tunsil to an extension. You know, he's got enormous leverage, obviously. Do you think you'll feel better or worse about the trade once he signs his extension?
That's already spent money in my mind, so it doesn't change it at all.
So it doesn't change it for you. Okay,
no.
So you're
it's not working. Like it's going to come to a shock to me. Like, whoa! Wait a second. Now you paid him money too?
I think there's people out there that are a little nervous about it because there's still people that criticize O'Brien for not signing him to a deal before he did the trade.
Well, this is the question. Okay, Laramie Tunsil, good player. I've long felt that you really, if you're a good offensive coordinator, you don't need an awesome offensive line. You need 5 good guys.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 5 good guys and you're an actually good offensive coordinator, you can win a Super Bowl with that. So I would have the offensive line improved. I would have loved to see them improve more. Part of this is on Deshaun. Deshaun and the route running and play calling to help get rid of the ball faster. It's not always Deshaun's fault when he's not getting rid of the ball. Sometimes it's a play calling. But look, I don't know how many of these guys won't get franchise tagged, but if you look at the free agents, Anthony Costanzo, Jack Conklin, not Andrew Whitworth, there's, you know, boy, Jason Peters is a free.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.